Hello and welcome to Technology Today. This is your host, Rich Kasmer. On Technology Today, we discuss technology issues of the day and examine how technology is affecting our lives these days. And as I see every week, it seems to be having a bigger and bigger impact on us as time moves on. We're fortunate this evening to have a guest in the studio with us. We have John Lemazny, and I will let John introduce himself in a moment, but we're going to be speaking this evening about open source software, not just software. We'll probably touch on open source in general. So, John, I'll let you introduce yourself to our guests or to our listeners.
Thank you, Rich, and I'm very, very happy to be here. My name is John Lemazny. I'm a consultant, a technology consultant mostly. I do work with graphic design, branding, web development, and I specialize in open source software because I like the fact that there's no boundaries to it.
Okay, great. So as long as we've each mentioned the term a couple of times now, open source. So what exactly is open source? Is there a definition for the term? What does it mean?
Sure. So I think to lead into the discussion, I think I'll start with an analogy. And the analogy is, imagine that you are going to a restaurant, fine restaurant, and you're getting your favorite meal. And it is well prepared, and the chef is masterful, and they make this dish. And you go, and you eat it, and you enjoy it. And you pay for it, and you leave. Right? This has happened. You're familiar with the idea.
Sure.
Alternatively, let's say that you had the same meal, but it does not cost anything when you leave. Let's say it's a dinner party instead. The chef is there. And the chef, after the meal, hands everybody a recipe for the meal that you just ate. That's open source. So the idea is that not only is there not usually a monetary cost associated, which is important because it means that people can make use of the software without the overhead of a monetary cost for licensing. But it goes further than that. And the further part is that you have the ability to get the source code, or you get the ability to get the source code and give it to a developer in order to make changes to the software as you wish. This is much different than proprietary software. An example is Adobe software. Adobe is beloved in the designer community, and I am a graphic designer. But I don't use Adobe software. I use Inkscape, and I use the GNU image manipulation program, and I use Scribus. I'm able to do exactly, precisely the same work. I do it a little bit differently, and I use completely different tools. My tools are open source. So my friends in the design community who have to pay for upgrades to Adobe software suffer because they have to find that $200 or $500 or $1,000. And even if you're a student and you get an academic discount or something else, eventually down the road, Adobe expects to have you pay into the use of that ecosystem. Open source is not like that. There are ways that you can give back to open source, and this is an example of it. I'm going and talking about open source, and I do this a lot. And I don't get paid as a result of that. My business is about making products, making graphic design or making training courses or whatever the case might be. So I still make money. I still have to make money. We all do. But open source software licensing is not the place where that money is exchanged. And as a result, I'm able to go into the poorest library in the county, or I'm able to go into the richest academic environment or corporate environment and still hand them that software and say, the licensing for this is not going to cost you anything, and there is a lot of flexibility with the software, because if there's something that you need that's not present in the software, we're not limited to what the proprietary software company is willing to do for you. We can make changes ourselves if we are developers, or we can get developers who are familiar with standards-based programming in order to make changes to that software.
Okay. Just to put it in context for some of our listeners, you mentioned a couple of examples with Inkscape and a product that I know as GIMP.
Yeah,
you use the longer term.
Yep.
There's
a reason for that.
Okay.
Because GIMP is just not a great name. It tends to put images in your mind that you don't want when you're thinking about beautiful photography.
Okay.
But the GIMP is very commonly.
What's the longer version of that?
The GNU image manipulation program.
Okay, good. Thank you.
And GNU is very common in open source. GNU refers to GNUs, not Unix. It's a recursive acronym.
Okay.
There's all kinds of little things like that, and I think that's another barrier to entry for a lot of people with open source.
Okay. What are some of the most well-known examples of open source software?
So software that you're probably using that is open source includes Android. If you are an Android phone user, there is an open source version of that software that you can install freely without Google's approval or otherwise say so. And an example, a very popular example in the open source world, is CyanogenMod's image that runs the Android Open Source Project, or AOSP. So if you run Android, though, it's essentially using open source software at its core. Another example is Firefox. If you use Firefox to browse, you are using an open source browser. If you're using Chrome to browse, that is an open source browser. There are many examples of open source if we're talking about servers. So when you visit a website, chances are greater than lesser that you are using Apache as your server, or not you as a system administrator, but you as a user. The reason you're able to get these web pages served to you is because on the server there is open source software. So from the server side to the user side, there are lots of examples of open source.
Mm-hmm.
I try to make people aware of a greater number of open source packages for lots of different purposes, because I think that it's powerful. And one final example, something that you would use as an end user but also involves a server, is WordPress. If you use WordPress as your content management system or as your blog engine, you are using open source software. And in fact, you can use WordPress.com as a way to get a free domain, but there are limitations to that software on their server, whereas you can also download WordPress.org and install it on your own server, as long as the server has PHP, MySQL, an operating system, and Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. So as long as you have the right stack present and you have some system administration skills, you can install WordPress on your own.
Okay. Those are really good examples. There's quite a few widely used things there. Are there hundreds, thousands of...
Thousands, yeah. If you're interested in getting a broad overview of all of the packages that are available in open source, a great place to look is SourceForge. And there's also Google Code, although Google Code has just been planned for removal. And the reason that they did that, in fact, is because SourceForge has regained popularity as an open source, a place for open source software.
Okay. And that's SourceForge.net,
yeah.
Okay. That kind of brings up one of the questions that I had been thinking of, is many people are hesitant to download things because of potential, you know, infections on their computer, downloading viruses. How does one know if they're getting something safe?
I'm so happy you asked the question, because in my conversations about open source with people, very often the question that comes next is it secure? And I'd laugh a little bit, because the thing about proprietary software is you don't know anything about it. You don't know what is going on in the background. You don't know what it's doing to your computer. You don't know what kinds of signals it's sending out. You don't know what information it's collecting. Sometimes we use reverse engineering in order to find out what a particular application is using, but we really don't know because we don't have access to the source code.
Mm-hmm.
With open source software, you could literally do a scan of the open source the code and do a search on a word like password, or do a search on the word like email, and see what it is doing around those terms. And if you don't feel comfortable doing that, you would be able to take it to a security expert, for instance, and say, can you tell me if this software is doing anything that I should be concerned about? Alternatively, we install proprietary software, and we think that because we paid money for it, that it somehow is more kind to our privacy, or that it somehow protects our privacy. It doesn't in the least.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say on the whole, because it's hard to generalize, I would say on the whole that proprietary software and open source software are at least equally secure. I would argue, though, that open source software, because so many more eyes, and not necessarily interested eyes get to see that code. And if there's a problem, or if something is going awry, or if it's being used for some malfeasance, somebody will alert the greater community to mm-hmm. that malfeasance. And it would be either disowned by the community, or it would be not used anymore. But certainly, it's more secure than not knowing and not being able to know what's in the software.
Okay. But if something... So there's many programs out there that are free, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're open
freeware
source.
Freeware and open source are not the same thing.
Right. So how does one know if something is open source as opposed to just some free product that somebody's offering?
So the difference, of course, between freeware and open source is the source code. So if freeware is given freely away, that's freeware. And free software is usually the term that we use. Free and Libre software or open source software is the term that we use for software in which it's distributed. That's the dinner part. And then the source code is distributed as well. That's the recipe part. You would know because the source code would be available. So whenever I see something, I have a whole bunch of RSS feeds and other things that I subscribe to in order to stay up to date on what's going on with open source. And very often I'll come across an article or a blog post or something that talks about, you know, 15 open source software packages for your small business. And my problem is I'll go into it and they will be talking about freeware rather than open source.
Mm-hmm.
And usually I'm not the only one to complain about it. We'll say that these are not open source packages, these are freeware packages.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with it is it doesn't meet the standards that I'm talking about in terms of security, for example, because freeware is often proprietary. Even though it's given away for free, it's proprietary in the sense that source code is not shared with it. So I have I can't look in the code and see what's going on in the code. I also, with open source software, can't repurpose the code. So in the open source world or free and Libre software world, one of the benefits is if I want to make a product in software and I don't want to start from scratch, but rather I want to build on the shoulders of giants, I can do that with open source software. I cannot do that with freeware.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, usually the licensing for freeware says very distinctly, you may not redistribute, or you cannot modify the software. And in fact, if we tried to take proprietary software and we wanted to find out how it worked, if we wanted to reverse engineer it, use Internet Explorer as an example, also freeware. Microsoft in general doesn't care for open source as a license. They've gotten a little bit better about it recently.
Mm-hmm.
But if you tried to reverse engineer Internet Explorer, for example, in order to find out how it works or in order to create a scenario where you would understand its security flaws, Microsoft would take action against you. They would probably sue you, do a cease and desist at least, and would try to stop you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a completely different way of thinking than open source, where tinkering and making and understanding are encouraged. It's an educational ecosystem.
Okay. And speaking of Microsoft, there is an open source product that has all the same components pretty much and much of the functionality is Microsoft Office, correct?
Yeah, LibreOffice, yeah.
Oh.
And so this is interesting because I myself, for my office needs, don't use LibreOffice, and I use instead Google Drive. And the reason I do that, even though it doesn't really fit with my philosophy in the same way that LibreOffice does, is because I've really grown attached to the Google ecosystem. And so even I, in my love for open source and my attempts to make open source the way that I work and live technologically, I really prefer the flexibility and cloud-based nature of Google Drive.
Mm-hmm.
There are not really great open source packages that are available for office productivity in the cloud. If LibreOffice had a cloud capability, I would probably be there.
Mm-hmm.
But LibreOffice is the formerly known as OpenOffice.
Mm-hmm.
Is the open source equivalent of Microsoft. It has a database tool, has a word processor, has a spreadsheet tool, has a presentation tool.
Mm-hmm.
What it doesn't have, and really what Microsoft Office didn't have until very recently, was a cloud-based solution.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Google is eating Microsoft's lunch right now. As a matter of fact, part of my business in doing consulting has been migrating companies, doing training, in migrating companies away from proprietary Microsoft products to Google Drive products, which are also proprietary, but the flexibility of cloud-based, the cloud-based nature of it is a nice thing.
Mm-hmm.
It would be harder, I think, to migrate a Microsoft Office shop to LibreOffice, because there's a whole bunch of things in a Microsoft ecosystem that are not covered by Office, like mm-hmm. Exchange
mm-hmm.
or the PBX, or not a PBX, but unified messaging.
Mm-hmm.
So while LibreOffice is great, it really doesn't have the rest of the components that an enterprise would need in order to do its everyday work.
Mm-hmm. Great. I'm going to take a quick break here. You're listening to Technology Today with your host, Rich Kasmer. We're here on WDVR FM 89.7 in Delaware Township, 90.5 WPNJ in Easton, PA, and W245CC 96.9 in Trenton. We're speaking with our guest this evening, John Lemazny from Lemazny Consulting. We're speaking about open source software, and pretty much we haven't touched on the wider movement yet, but let's do that. What is open source in general, and what else is included besides just software?
So open source is a way of thinking, and the source part of open source really talks about software. So we would use the phrase open source software if we were talking about software specifically, but it can also be applied to hardware. There's open source hardware, and open source hardware, for example, are things like Arduinos and Raspberry Pi and other physical computing devices in which you're able to take it apart to its smallest components and put it back together mm-hmm. in whatever configuration you want. So Arduino in particular is really great about this, because not only do you get components and share how you brought these components together in order to, let's say, create a security system for your home, but also the software is usually open source as well. So Arduino is an electronics prototyping platform where you can create a circuit to do anything using sensors and actuators. And you write the software as well, and it's very common in that community for people to distribute the entire solution, the hardware solution, the circuit, and the software solution. So moving from software to hardware, that's an example of how we would make use of open source hardware. But we can go further and apply it to all kinds of things. I, in my life, have lost over 100 pounds. I used to be obese, and I was obese for most of my life. And one of the reasons that I was able to not be obese was because I read a lot and learned a lot about calories. I tend to think about calories as an open source way of thinking about nutrition and calories. Because a calorie is a calorie is a calorie. It's a standard. And I love standards because standards are open source. There's nothing in the way of me understanding how a calorie works. And calories are very commonly published, right? So you can walk into a Subway now and you see the calories for the sandwiches up on the wall. And an alternative to this, though, is Weight Watchers. Right, so Weight Watchers makes use of this thing called points, and points are a proprietary way of thinking about calories. And it always perplexed me a little bit about why an organization would do that if they were truly interested in people just knowing what they're eating.
Mm-hmm. But
the answer is really clear. The reason that you would do that is because you want to market you want to monetize the ability to understand how many points of fuel are in this food,
mm-hmm.
even though calories already do that. And Weight Watchers points are different than calories because they give sort of qualitative value to food. They say if you eat a piece of lettuce that is 10 calories and you eat a piece of chocolate that is 10 calories, the lettuce is going to be 0 points and the chocolate's going to be 1 point or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is value added in that, but it's certainly not an open source way of thinking about the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, genetics and all kinds of fields are often a proprietary component is brought in because there's money to be made from that proprietary aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take out the money, for many companies, all of a sudden the interest is no longer there.
Sure.
So open source tends not to be especially commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Open source tends not to be especially monetizing. And open source tends to not have a lot of profit involved. And as a result, it doesn't get as much attention as the equivalent way of thinking about food or genetics or software as proprietary solutions do.
So, you know, one organization that comes to mind is Mozilla.
Yeah.
You know, they've got a number of open source
amazing
products.
Company.
How do they survive? Where do they make their money from?
I believe Mozilla is a not-for-profit, and they exist on donations.
Okay.
But there are many other companies that are open source companies that don't have a budget, don't have a traditional way of thinking about money. They get donations very often, but that's not necessarily the source of their recompense. The way that they are recompensed is by the community giving back, or people doing volunteerism, or people generating things. I'll give you an example of one interaction I've had personally with Mozilla, is that they have contests in order to stylize their browser, the Firefox browser. And I and several other 100 people put in designs in order to kickstart their customization campaign. This was probably 10 years ago. And they got a lot of people doing work for free. And the benefit was that the ecosystem that they built around their customization engine for their browser was big and beautiful and bold, and people didn't expect anything in return because it's not that kind of a community. The community is a giving community.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, they got value, and we get value because all of the designs were then published for free. And so it wasn't so much about money, it was about giving back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about that in most of my volunteerism, especially where I'm talking about open source software. There are many other opportunities I get, though, where I'm paid for those visits. And so it is a problem to be solved, but it's a solvable problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are lots of ways around open source that money can be generated,
mm-hmm.
but the source code itself tends not to be that place. Another thing about Mozilla is that they have had a long, strong relationship with Google. And Google was, I think, their main benefactor up until very recently. And part of the reason that they did that was because Firefox was a very popular browser, and Google search engine was the search engine that they defaulted as the default search engine.
Mm-hmm.
When their agreement came to an end, Mozilla went to some other form of income for its employees and staffers, and there's still money to be made, and they have a name that's amazing, but most of their money came from Google for a very long time.
John, we're starting to run a little short on time, but where do you see the open source software movement going, or if you want to put it in terms of the wider, larger movement as well, that's fine.
Well, I think that mobile is certainly the way that things are going. And if we're to talk about open source in a strict fashion and talk about mobile ecosystems in a strict fashion, we could easily say that an open source operating system is the most popular open source solution or open source software package that exists, because Android is open source at its core, and Android, because of its sheer numbers, is the largest installed mobile operating system that exists. And I think that as development happens for Android, people should be encouraged for that development to be open source as well. I don't see a lot of that happening, though.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like to think about open source in terms of the idea as growing, probably more so than open source software
mm-hmm.
Growing. And open source software has a huge life in the back end, in the server part. It has a presence in the front end part, in the end user part, things like browsers and software packages for specific use. In my ecosystems, it is all I do. So if I need a solution for video editing, I'll look for an open source solution. If I need a solution for audio editing or graphic design or anything, I know that there's probably three great packages where it will solve my problem. Is it going to be 100% compatible with a proprietary solution that's more popular and more well installed? Usually, but not always.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of my work, in addition to just doing the work, is making sure that nobody else's workflow is restricted. So again, I really try to choose standards, channels, that there are standards all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
So Inkscape, for example, the exported file is an SVG, or a scalable vector graphics format, that works perfectly well in Illustrator,
mm-hmm.
and Photoshop and other tools. So I don't know that it's going to grow immensely. I think that it's grown greatly in the past 10 years, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Linux, I would love to see Linux get the popularity that I think it deserves. It's mm-hmm. a beautiful operating system, and I use it as my desktop machine,
mm-hmm.
and don't need to run Windows in my workspace anymore or my personal space. I do have a couple Mac OS machines around. But that's mostly because I just think it's a beautiful operating system. And every once in a while, I need to run a proprietary software package, and it just won't run on Linux. So I need to keep a more popular operating system around in that event so that I can run Dreamweaver if I need to, or some other Adobe package or something.
Okay. Great. Well, John, I apologize, but we're out of time for this evening. Thank you so much for coming on, and really appreciate you sharing all this useful info.
I really love the opportunity. Thank you to you, Rich, and to your audience. And if there's any way that I can help you, please don't hesitate to contact me. If you do a Google search on Lemasney, Lemasney, I'm sure that you will find me.
Great. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
This has been Technology Today. Have a great night, everybody.